Off the Ball, GAA.
There's only a couple of guarantees in life, like debt, taxes, and Mayo will be as unpredictable as hell. And I knew they would come out with a performance, and it did.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate, or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
Good evening and welcome along to Monday night's Off the Ball. We are coming to you on the back of another extraordinary few days in Irish sport. So, the bombshell news yesterday that Damien Duff has stepped down as Shelburne manager is still settling in around the League of Ireland. We're going to be over this evening because we've got Nathan, who is at their game tonight in Waterford, who will be over to you in just a moment. After 8 o'clock then, we're going to be speaking to Seamus Hickey and Jamesy O'Connor about one of the most extraordinary results in the history of hurling. Dublin tearing up the bracket and knocking out Limerick on Saturday at Croke Park. And then after 9 o'clock, Colm and Darren will talk through that All-Ireland football quarter-final draw, which is probably the tastiest quarter-final draw we've had in a number of years. So loads and loads happening. Our number is 0879 180 180 if you want to get in touch on WhatsApp. Colm Mullany is here for tonight's bumper news round. Evening, Colm.
Hi, lads. How's it going?
And Mick McCarthy is here as well. Hello, Mick.
So I am. How are you, Owen?
All good. All good. So we finished up Friday's show from the Regional Sports Centre in Waterford. We thought it would be the last we've heard of the RSC for quite some time. Never did we think we'd be going back to the RSC on Monday night. Because, to be honest with you, you've got Bows against Rovers tonight. Pretty clearly, from the vantage point of Friday, the number one story in League of Ireland football come Monday. But all of that has been turned on its head. Nathan Murphy is down at the RSC tonight because it is the first game in the post-Damien Duff era. Nathan, a very good evening to you.
Hiya, lads.
So, the story tonight is that Joey O'Brien is in charge, and a lot of people will just be wondering, is this going to be the solution for Shells in the medium to long term now?
Certainly seems like it's the obvious solution. He knows the club inside out. He's been a key cog in Damien Duff's backroom team. He's obviously a player of vast experience. I think personality-wise, maybe not a million miles away from Damien Duff in terms of how he looks at the game and how he looks at a dressing room. And also the timing when they're playing an important league game tonight, but they're just 2 weeks away from their Champions League game against Linfield, which is their most important game of the season by far when you look at the monetary rewards and the sporting rewards. If they can come through that tie, you'd have to think that Joey O'Brien, the decision his is. Now, he doesn't have the UEFA Pro license as of yet. There are workarounds for that for the initial months, and there are members of the backroom staff who have that pro license, and he's actually registered to go and do it, so I don't think that will be an issue. The one question mark might be the fact that he's been given the job for tonight and Friday, and maybe he feels he had to step in to get them through these couple of games. Does he want the job? I think that will be the one question mark, that and the one question we'll be asking Joey O'Brien after the game tonight.
Yeah, we'll come back to that in just a moment, but the other piece of reporting today that was pretty extraordinary was that there might have been an opening for Damien Duff in the immediate future, specifically to go in with Keith Andrews at Brentford. Now, this has been dispelled, it's believed, from Damien Duff's camp.
It has. I know Dan McDonald's reporting that Damien Duff has said it's not happening, and it always seemed like a very strange rumour because, well, let's think about it this way. As you mentioned, Friday night's games. If Shelburne had beaten Derry City on Friday night, Damien Duff would still be the Shelburne manager. He would have been here tonight. So it's not as if he'd been working in the background talking with Keith Andrews of this might be coming to an end, here's my get out as a coach or an assistant manager in the Premier League. So I think it always seemed like a nice story of putting two and two together and the relationship they would have had from the Republic of Ireland as players and then working under Stephen Kenny together, and Duff been such a big name and a big personality that it could be a good fit. But it always seemed very, very unlikely. And listen, we discussed it last week. It looks as though it's getting ever closer to Keith Andrews is going to get that Brentford job, which in itself is going to be an extraordinary development to have his first managerial job as a really attractive Premier League one. But no, right now, I think Damien Duff, you would expect, will certainly take a few weeks, if not months, off. I know he said that it was always going to be Shelburne or nothing. It was his club. He would die for the players. He would die for his staff. But you'd have to think with the obsession that he had with this team and with management and how good and successful he's been at it over the last 3 years, that he can't stay out of the game for a considerable period of time.
So you reckon if they had won on Friday night, Duffer would still be in the job, but it would have just been delaying the inevitable. It would have just taken their next big defeat, their next home defeat, for him to pull the plug on it. It wasn't as dramatic as that result literally pulling this whole carpet from underneath him.
Well, I think there was a sense over the last few weeks that his frustration and his anger and, well, his patience was going with the squad, and his struggle to get something out of them, to get what he got out of them last year. And listen, his comments across three or four different interviews on Friday night, even for Duff, were severe in their criticism. And, you know, I think it was maybe surprising in a way that he started talking about himself quite a bit, and that he was the one having to drive everything, himself and Joey O'Brien, that there was nothing really coming from the players in terms of leadership or motivation, that it was all manager-driven, that he was the one who was acting like a professional before the game, having a siesta and eating properly, and were the players doing this? Were they doing what the Shamrock Rovers players were doing? Were they acting the way that the Rovers players act? So that's heavy stuff in a dressing room. But that came, obviously, because of the performance on Friday night. And I think if they had won that game and coming down here again, where they would have felt quite confident despite their inconsistent form, you just don't know. I don't think we'll ever know unless we hear from Damien Duff and he explains his mindset of the last few weeks. But I think it's fair to say that maybe if he'd got through Friday night and got through tonight, that he would have been still in charge for Linfield, because as much as it's a big game, a huge game for Shelburne, it was also a big, big game for Damien Duff taking charge in the Champions League for his reputation, but also for all they had worked for over the last 3 years, and a winnable game as well. So, listen, things obviously moved quite fast from when he left Tolka Park on Friday night, and whatever discussions he had with people, and it seems he didn't have many discussions with too many people between Friday night and arriving in on Sunday morning to make it clear to the club's owners and those running the club and then the players that he was not returning and that he was going to leave.
Nathan, he's obviously like someone who's very close to the players, wears his heart on his sleeve and so on, and you kind of know what you get with him. But there's a part of me that wonders if there's a little bit of self-preservation here going after, you know, with the comments he made on Friday night, then resigning. Shelburne are not playing well. They've spent a little bit of money, obviously, after winning the league. Talking to a few Shelburne fans since this happened, you know, there's a little bit of dissatisfaction with the style of play, with the fact that they've been playing five at the back this season when it hasn't seemed to work, and it doesn't seem like there's been any kind of movement from a tactical point of view. So, you know, in some ways, there is a kind of a case here of, like, you know, someone's come into the job, has done unbelievably well for these 3 years, has the reputation at the highest it could possibly be. Things are not going as well this year, and it's out the door. There have been managers in throughout history who have behaved this way.
There have, and maybe I'm giving Damien Duff too much credit. I just don't feel that is Duff, and that is the way that he would behave, particularly with what's coming down the track in the next fortnight. And I understand what you're saying, that maybe he has looked at this and it's not going to get any better, and he's looked around the dressing room and he's looked at the potential targets over the transfer window and realised, do you know what, we're probably going to be in this mid-table struggle for the rest of the season, and how do I get them going again for next year, because we've set the targets so high and they've achieved so much, we're always going to be judged on that. And they're looking also at what Shamrock Rovers are doing, which isn't standing still, and decided, actually, for my reputation, now's the time to step away. I think a win over Linfield and a run, which would have been realistic then, to the Conference League, would be massively enhancing for his reputation, and the fairy tale romantic element of a European run for Damien Duff, I would have thought would have been a real driving force. But I think it's very hard to figure out what's been going through his head when, as I've been doing, going back through interviews over the last 3-6 months, and you're sort of blown away by maybe the madness of so much of it and the various different things that have happened over the last few years. But so much of what he had to say was about sticking together, of, I love these guys, I would die for these guys, I treat these guys like family.
He said they were his only friends last week.
Exactly. Even you look at the last 10 days from... who's broken whose heart here, I'm not quite sure, but even the last 10 days have maybe been the suggestion that things were turning, in that there was the post-game outburst against Stephen Bradley that's obviously got, I think, nastier than either of them would have expected or maybe even wanted. Then you have the celebration bowing down in front of the supporters this night last week, and then, as I say, just going probably that little bit too far in terms of his criticism of the dressing room on Friday night. But again, you would feel that the power of his personality is that he would have been able to turn it around again. But whether he felt he could turn it around to the extent of getting them back competing for a league title this year or next year, you know, maybe his own energy levels, which wouldn't be surprising, maybe he just needs a break. Maybe he just needs a moment himself out of the spotlight, because when he's in it, he is all in. And I would have felt that actually he seemed to manage that quite well, in that when you'd meet Duff on a maybe a Tuesday or a Wednesday of a game week and at a press conference, you know, he was a totally different personality. He was totally chilled out. Even pre-match, he'd be, you know, very calm, full of conversation. And then the post-match stuff was obviously a very different experience, where he was wearing his heart on his sleeve, and maybe that has just got too much for him, and he's decided for everybody's sake that he needs to step out of this.
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, the big news from the League of Ireland tonight is that the RSC has inserted itself as number one in terms of the soundtracks of League of Ireland grounds. Luke Littler ready to walk out into the pitch there by the sounds of things. Like, it's going to be very interesting to see how this does actually play out in terms of the coverage of the league. Like, immediately you've lost your avenue onto the back page on a number of different weeks with Duffer leaving. I know literally every fan who's not a Shells fan will say the exact opposite. It's great that Duffer's gone, because he obviously rubbed up so many people the wrong way from that point of view. But for the floating voter, it's going to be really interesting to see what this actually does to the league on a wider level. There is one other piece of football news today which we should chat about. We've been waiting for this for quite some time. Have a listen.
What makes him a great player on the pitch makes him a pain in the ass off it.
Roy Keane is not going home.
People are one side or another.
Roy Keane's done nothing wrong.
I feel he's let down his country.
He can't be replaced.
He got us to the World Cup.
You're unmanageable.
No, it's you that can't manage. That's the problem.
I think it's great.
What a bad joke.
He's the best player we have.
You've f***ed up.
The earthquake shook the nation.
I think we're done.
You never tell me when we're done. I'm just getting started.
Yes, the first Saipan trailer. I'm buzzing about this.
Are you?
I've heard a lot of talk about this over the last couple of hours, people being dismissive of this. I looked at this trailer and I'm like, okay, this is going to be very, very good.
Well, everyone's going to watch it anyway. Whether it's good or not, everyone's going to watch it for sure. It's going to be good. It has to be good.
Yeah.
Given the content, surely.
I think we're too invested. I think everything is just going to be picking it apart. And you know, I'm already annoyed that Roy Keane is taller than Mick McCarthy. You know, I need to come out of this. I need to just relax and try and enjoy it. But I don't know. Like, I mean, I just think we're too deep in Saipan. I think this might be really good for an English audience. We're talking about it in the office today about how, you know, they all know what happened, but like, they've forgotten the details. A lot of people who weren't, like, you know, of age in 2002 never knew them in the first place. This wasn't that big a deal. But Roy Keane is this like insanely famous man. He's the number one pundit on television. And this, the biggest thing that ever happened to him is not overly relevant to what they know about him. So, great film for them. For us, I just think we're like, there's four people in this call at the moment. Two of them had an argument about Saipan in the last 2 weeks. You know,
it's still a thing.
I think we're too invested.
I don't know. I just love the fact that like somebody has been paid as a costume designer to actually design, you know, the Aircom kit for 2002 for an on-screen production. Like, I love the fact that in the trailer and a visual level, you can see like Roy Keane sitting on like a wicker chair in the middle of this like forest, which looks like those forests in Saipan that are known for darker reasons. I don't know. I've got hope for the artistic level that this thing is going to reach, even if they may have got the heights of the actors wrong relative to the actual story.
Steve Coogan will hold it together as well. Like, you know,
there's some gravitas there.
And even the accent, like, it's not over the top. It doesn't seem like he's doing it. Everyone can do a Mick McCarthy impersonation. And I think he's actually decided to be an actor.
Yeah.
As opposed to someone just doing impersonation, which I think will bode well over the course of the 90 or 120 minutes, whatever the film is.
Nathan, you buzzing for this?
Yes. I'm looking forward to watching it. Maybe we should just make an executive decision, the four of us here and now, that as a radio show, we just enjoy it for its artistic merit and not analyze it, and not get every member of the squad on to go, no, that didn't happen exactly. No, that wasn't said. No, that's not to perfection. And think of the damned United. Did it upset you, Mick, because Billy Bremner was 6'4"?
Well, Gilesy being about 7'2" was an issue for sure. I think look, the best thing that could come out of this, Nathan, is and more talk about The Office, is that these films, if it's a big hit, will spawn, you know, a Netflix documentary series, and we might finally get the Connolly tapes.
Yeah.
That's the end credits rolling.
Yeah.
That should absolutely be just as the end credits are rolling. And he's dug them out. He dug them out over recent months as well. So, yeah, I'm interested to see what the sort of ensemble cast is and who's playing all of the other squad members and what sort of role they have in this. We obviously had Mick McCarthy on the show a couple of weeks ago, and Mick was talking about meeting Steve Coogan and thinking he probably wouldn't go to the premiere or maybe get an invite to the premiere. So, yeah, it took me a while to come to get to grips with the fact that this was actually happening. And now that it's there and the trailer is out, it feels real. And I think I'll get to the stage where I can just go and enjoy it. And you're right. I think if you're an English audience and you're coming to this late and that was that thing, oh, Roy, you didn't go to the World Cup, did he, or something like that, might get a sense of just how big it was in this country.
The funniest outcome here is that it is actually an artistic masterpiece. And critics are like, oh my God, this is like 5 stars, just unavoidable for the Oscars next year. Best picture, best international flick, Saipan. And or like Steve Coogan wins an Oscar.
Springsteen movie up against Mick McCarthy and Saipan.
And also it's like from the producers of Cocaine Bear and Kneecap, a far more extraordinary story than any of those two narratives.
Well, if you were just to listen to that trailer and not know much about this story, and you heard the kind of like, you know, Roy Keane will not leave the World Cup, I think he let down his country, and all these kind of like, you know, vox pop stuff, and you think, oh God, this is going to be so cheesy, except for the fact that that was actually what was happening. It really was as simple as that. He was either a traitor or a hero, and there was kind of no in between, and we were all insane.
Yeah, we've got loads more build up to this, whatever it is insane. Coming out, but that Saipan trailer has dropped this evening. Nathan, we will be back over to you at the RSC as the evening develops, as the potentially the Joey O'Brien era begins at Shelburne, taking temporary charge this evening after Damien Duff. So the news round tonight is with UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action. Carl, you are starting with that Duff story.
Yeah, and the League of Ireland tonight, Shelburne beginning life, as you say, on without Damien Duff this evening. Joey O'Brien in charge of the reigning league champions as they head to the RSC for that meeting with Waterford in the Premier Division tonight. Shells announced the departure of Duff yesterday afternoon, with his time at Talca Park coming to an end after almost 4 years. And in that time, Duff guided Shells to the league title last season. They also reached the final of the FAI Cup as well during his time at the club. And speaking to our own Ben Symes after his side's loss to Derry City on Friday night, Duff said his players needed to improve on what they've produced so far this season.
Defending titles should be the least their players' worries at the moment. I've aimed. How motivated are they? 24/7, 7 days a week. You could argue Rovers have a hunger to claim their title back. Are they hungrier than us? They certainly have quality, but are they hungrier than us? You'd aim over the whatever 21 games, 22 games for us already. They possibly are, which is damning on here them. But certainly me as well, so everything comes from the top. So it's a big, big gap. But like I said, defending titles is absolutely the least of my players' worries at the moment.
That's Damien Duff speaking after his team's display at Talca Park on Friday night. Also today, as you mentioned earlier, Owen Duff had been linked with some reports linking to him to a coaching role with Keith Andrews at Brentford. However, Dan McDonnell in the Irish Independent has since reported that that is not something that is on Duff's radar right now. It is understood, though, that Andrews is edging closer to being appointed as manager by the London club. The other fixtures tonight in the League of Ireland Premier Division at Derrymount Park, the leaders Shamrock Rovers up against Bohemians. Elsewhere, St. Pat's face Derry City. Sligo Rovers play Galway United, and Cork City take on Drogheda United tonight. And there is a new signing today for Cork City. They have announced that defender Rory Feely will join the club from Crawley Town. Just to mention as well, the First Division fixtures, leaders Dundalk away to Finn Harps tonight. Cove Ramblers host Kerry. Bray Wanderers play UCD. Treaty United face Wexford, and it's Longford Town versus Midlands rivals Athlone Town.
Owen has been in touch to say this Saipan movie would be so much better if it was a documentary narrated and reported by Alan Partridge, which probably not a bad shout, to be fair.
Yeah.
Where do you want to go next, Colin?
The Club World Cup, some games there this evening as well. The final round of games in Group B get underway in under an hour's time now at 8 o'clock. Atletico Madrid go up against the group leaders Botafogo, and then second place PSG. They're level with Atletico on 3 points. They face the Seattle Sounders, and both of those matches underway from 8 o'clock Irish time.
Have either of you had one single conversation in a non-work environment about the Club World Cup?
No, we've had a few conversations in a work environment though, haven't we?
Yes.
It has not come up. It has not come up. We're going to talk about the hurling, everything in a few minutes, and it's like, I've never known. I was forgetting who I was replying to and stuff like that. There was so many messages coming through and Saturday. That was once in a lifetime moment, fine. But, you know, I don't think I've got one message or heard any conversations about the Club World Cup. Nobody's watching it. Nobody is aware of it. Nobody cares about it.
Yeah, well, I'm on the same page as you. I don't want to speak for Nathan here, who's eavesdropping in, but I think he's probably a proponent of the Club World Cup insofar as he can be. I think he definitely takes more of an interest than we would. But I'm apparently in the knockout stages when we get there, which definitely isn't. I know it's the final round of games, as you just said. Once we get to the knockout stages, apparently that's when we're all going to start caring. Right. So brace yourself, is all I'd say. I'm really, really excited about this weekend, Cathal, the fixtures for the quarterfinals.
Yeah, they've been confirmed for the All-Ireland Football Championship quarterfinals. They'll take place next weekend, and the fixtures will all take place at Croke Park, two of them on Saturday and two on Sunday. The first game up will be Donegal against Monaghan next Saturday at 4 o'clock. That'll be followed by the meeting of Dublin and Tyrone from a quarter past six. Then on Sunday, it's Meath versus Galway at 1:45, and Armagh then play Kerry in the final game of the weekend at 4 o'clock on Sunday. All of that means it'll be a six-day turnaround for Donegal following their win over Louth and Ballybuffet yesterday, and their manager Jim McGuinness says that although it's a tough schedule, they're still looking forward to returning to Croke Park. He spoke with our reporter Scarlett Heron yesterday.
It's a grueling schedule. Like, you know, it's a grueling schedule. They're amateur players and they've been asked to do a hell of a lot, and then the rules means they're doing even more than they would have been doing up to this point. And eight games, you know, is a lot in 12 weeks. But at the same time, we set ourselves the goal that we wanted to be in the quarter final, and when we lost the game here to Tyrone, we knew that we were going to have to probably play three games in a row if we wanted to be in the Croke Park on quarter final day. And so we have two of those games navigated now, and we're looking forward to the quarter final rather than apprehension. You know, it's a good complaint to have.
Yeah, and obviously it's Monaghan or Meath next week, so you'll be watching the Ottawa morning. How do you now prepare? Only a week to prepare. How do you sort of coach the players now? What's your schedule going to be like in the upcoming days?
Well, it's very, very difficult to prepare because you don't have a lot of time. You know, really, you might get one training session, and you know, there's only so much you can do in one training session when you're looking to set up against the team and press them high and defend a certain way and attack a certain way. All that, you know, all that has to be filtered into a 1 hour training session, you know, so it's almost impossible. But listen, it is what it is, and we just have to get on with it now. I think we have to trust our own processes.
Yeah, I mean, I think people who said that there was no jeopardy in this format should have listened closer to the GAA managers who've been at the coalface for the last 3 years, and this format has been thrown out because of a perceived lack of jeopardy, which just simply is not true. You look at the last 2 years. Last year, three of the four winners in the All-Ireland quarterfinals had that week off last weekend. The previous year, three winners out of the four came from a rest as well. And the one exception to that 2 years ago actually went to a penalty shootout, so that was a draw. And then the one upset last year from a week off versus a team that was playing the previous week was that Galway-Dublin game, which was a bit of an upset and a bit of a shock on so many different levels. So the deck is loaded against Jim McGuinness and that Donegal team because they did not win the group. The deck is loaded against you for not winning as many games as possible in the group stage. And that, for me, is jeopardy. And we're throwing this all out next year for that exact reason, that there's not enough jeopardy. So let's see what happens this weekend. There could be the 1 year now, to be fair, where you do have people coming through the week upset the apple cart a small bit. But I don't know. I think there'll be limited sympathy for Jim McGuinness this week. We don't know what his private opinions are after seeing the fixtures this afternoon, but certainly they were out last weekend, and they're going to be out first next weekend. So I would suspect that he's not overly pleased, especially when he looks at a team like Kerry playing last Saturday.
Yeah.
First out last weekend, and then they're last out next weekend.
I think, and look, I mean, I was critical of them a couple of weeks ago with the CCCC stuff. That was only last Monday, actually. Wow. Time goes by fast, doesn't it? Or slowly is probably what I'm trying to say. I think he'd have a point here if he was the big complaint, because I don't really understand what the difference is between the Meath-Galway fixture and the Donegal-Monaghan fixture, other than, you know, well, I suppose Galway did play yesterday as well. So it's not that big a difference. But
somebody's got to suffer.
It had to be Kerry. The Kerry game had to be the main event on Sunday. The Dublin game had to be the main event on Saturday, I think.
Yeah, but and the situation there for people who aren't aware is that RTE have the first pick. So you're going to pick Armagh versus Kerry, and then that means that's your 4 o'clock on Sunday slot. So that's straight away locked in. And then I presume GA Plus have the next two. So then they would pick Dublin Tyrone, obviously, as the second best game. So that'll be a Saturday. And then it's a toss of a coin, really, between the other two fixtures, yeah. I think, anyway. And then RTE are left with the fourth pick, which will go back to Sunday as well on the national broadcaster. So it's out of their hands on that sense, but it's also out of their hands as soon as they lost that game to Tyrone.
That's it, isn't it? Like, I mean, you know, there was a time when they would have lost the Tyrone, that was the end of their championship, you know. So, like, that happens. And, yeah, I don't think they can complain too much. But I think you're right. We were talking to Mike Quirk last week, again, about the, you know, the great last round of the group stages and sort of saying goodbye to them. And he was like you. He's kind of, I've always been a proponent of him. He said people who aren't involved in teams don't understand that jeopardy. That from day one, finishing first, second or third, as well as obviously fourth being the ultimate disaster, matters. And matters all the way through as well. So, yeah, maybe we should have taken him at their word.
As I said, I'm buzzing about these fixtures. I think it's the best quarterfinal lineup we've had in a number of years. I think it's down to the strength of the teams who've had to come through the preliminary quarterfinal. And I think we might actually have one or two teams actually winning from that perspective as well this weekend. But like, you just think as well of what this weekend is up against in terms of recent comparisons of quarterfinals. Like, they've been miserable for so many years. Yeah. Like, I think of that 2022 Saturday where it was Derry versus Clare and Cork versus Dublin. Just an afternoon that would suck the joy out of anybody. And then yesterday you had Derry versus Kerry. Yesterday, last year, you had Derry versus Kerry in the All-Ireland quarterfinal in one of the worst games of football ever played. So the bar is low. But yeah, finally, I think there's a quarterfinal weekend where everybody will be like, that was
pretty good. In fairness, I think the format and the new rules obviously have added so much to it. I think all the football matches that we've had, and I think the new rules have suited some of the teams that are there. Like, Meads are a team, I think, that are really well suited to the new rules, and that they're probably one of the best teams in the country at the manufacturing two-pointers and kicking them. And then Monaghan as well have really excelled under the new rules. And then just in terms of the games that we've seen, and I think it might be poised even to take off even further at Croke Park, is the momentum swings are huge, and teams can score really heavily now when they have a bit of momentum. If you can press up and pick out and start winning ball three or four in a row, you can really get a bit of a burst on. And now we're going to have huge crowds at Croke Park, which adds another layer onto the momentum factor. It could be something to keep an eye on over the next little while.
I'd be surprised if Meath and Galway was the last pick for the TV. Now, it could have been. I'd be surprised if it was, or I'd be surprised that it was one or the other, right? Because Meath, for me, are, you know, we're talking about Donegal and their short time frame. Like, they had an easy enough game at home. They had it won, you know, 10 minutes into the second half, and they sauntered to a finish. They were at home. Galway had an awful journey, you know, up to Newry. They struggled, and they really, like, there was a time halfway through that second half when you thought they were beaten. Even though they never actually surrendered the lead, the momentum of the game was so much that you just didn't see how they were going to get the possession to go and win the game. If they didn't score that goal, I don't think they would have won. And, you know, they had to go to the well, and then they have to go and play a fresh Meath team who are, like, so dangerous and so free scoring, and obviously have the week off, to your point earlier. So this is one of the games of the weekend. Well, like, you know, Meath could easily win this.
But just looking at the back of the indo there with Pádraig Joyce's quotes, his first line is, we put ourselves in that situation so we're not going to be complaining about having travelled over 1,800 kilometres over five weekends. So they obviously lost their first game as well, didn't they, against Dublin in the group. So that's what put them on the back foot there. So that's a reflection of the good standard of the format, I think.
I think so. I'm also working on this theory that Croke Park is actually not going to be the best setting for the new rules, just given the evidence that we have. Now, your momentum point about a full stadium definitely stands true, but it's going to be something I'll put to Colm and Darren a little bit later on about the potential that the provincial grounds are actually going to bring the best out of these rules because of the confined spaces, not in spite of it. So we'll get their expert take on that a little bit earlier on. And just one last thing to mention on the football. Amazing to see that the guy who Jim McGuinness sent up the tree in Killarney there a few years ago has got a new job as Loud's team bus driver. He did a phenomenal job yesterday, and what a day for Ger Brennan and co getting to see the beautiful Ben Bulbin, Colm. I'm sure you'll...
I mean, don't miss an opportunity is what I'd say.
Yeah.
Fair play. When you're in the general area, you might as well take a look.
Right, we're going to take a quick break, and your next story is on hurling. Quite a bit happened in the hurling over the course of the weekend, so we'll do that next. And before that, it's time for the Cash Machine.
News Talk's Summer Cash Machine.
Now, the biggest cash prize ever given away on Irish radio is up for grabs this Friday, and the number you need to know now is €252,000. And there are now two ways you can enter. You can visit newstalk.com/cash machine, where you can enter online, or you can text PLAY, P-L-A-Y, to 57557. That's 57557. You have to get your entry in by 3 p.m. on Friday, and then across the Go Loud network of stations, someone will get that call. If it's you that gets that call, you have to answer it within five rings. Give us the exact amount in euro and cent, and you'll win the cash. So remember that amount one more time. €252,000. Over 18s only. Text costs €2.50 plus your standard message rate to play. You're playing across the Go Loud network of stations, and terms and conditions are on newstalk.com.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate, or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
You're welcome to an extended Monday night News Round. It's Owen, Mick, and Cahill here in studio, and we are turning our attention to hurling, Cahill.
Yeah, we are, because Dublin manager Niall O'Callaghan says they'll remain grounded in the aftermath of their win over Limerick in the All-Ireland Hurling quarter-finals on Saturday. The Dubs produced one of the biggest shocks in the modern era to beat John Kiely's team by 224 to 28 points, and they did it all with 14 men for much of the game after the first half dismissal of Chris Crummy. And Dublin now set to play Cork in the All-Ireland semi-finals on the weekend after next, and O'Callaghan says they're remaining focused on the wider picture.
I get it, Limerick, for what they were and what they've won, going down to 14, like, incredible achievement. In our minds, you know, there's four games here. We've two down and we've two to go. And like, I'm not under. That's not me. Under. I know we look. I understand what you're saying, and I know we look back on this day like that. But as regards ourselves and the way we go at things, there's 4 days there, we two down. We obviously had a huge challenge. The way things went into the Munster final, we knew it was going to be a huge day there today. We knew that challenge. But it's two down and we're out again 2 weeks' time. I don't mean to state the obvious, but that's the way, you know, we park this in the morning, and we look forward to kind of fortnight's time. So not to understate the day that's in, I totally understand what we have achieved, but this will be long forgotten as well if we don't follow through in 2 weeks' time.
Every time he speaks, you just get the sense of an extremely impressive man. And to be fair, before last weekend, it was kind of based mostly on his words and maybe the results of the team. You were unsure if they were making improvements on last year. I think clearly they're better than they were last year, given that result on Saturday. But it's amazing how quickly it's just consensus now that this is the biggest upset in recent hurling history. Like, I've even heard the Offaly Antrim thing dismissed as, no, this is a bigger result. It seems unanimous that this is the biggest one that anybody can remember.
I think, did Laois beat Dublin in one of those big turnarounds?
Yeah. Yes.
That was one of the big ones of recent times, but this is...
Kerry beat Waterford in 1993, which was a huge one. And, you know, you had other ones throughout history where things like that happened. But I think what you take there is, like, Waterford at a low ebb at that time, awfully fair enough, were a coming team and, you know, would go on to win Leinster again the following year and, you know, would win All-Ireland in 94. But they weren't Limerick. This Limerick team are arguably top two or three greatest teams of all time. And I know they probably haven't been at their imperious best over the last two seasons, but the idea that a team at what we thought the level of Dublin was would come and beat them, and to do it with 14 men. Like, it's the 14 men thing is just remarkable to me. You look back at the Clare-Cork game earlier in the year where Clare had that big comeback and almost won the game in the end. Was it Shane Barrett was sent off that day? I could be wrong on what player it was, but it was in the middle of the second half, completely changed the game. Everything, like, it went from Cork easy win to Clare should have won the game just by that sending off. Darren McCarthy in the Cork Tip game sent off before the game. It's a non-contest. Tip actually getting praised today. I even heard Skettle talk about them on the hurling pod for how they stuck with it that day, because that game was over after 5 minutes, you know? And then you see this thing. Dublin are 2 points down after 15 minutes of the game and their captain gets sent off. Like, there is no... they're hurling well, game ruined. They were the texts that were going around at that stage of the game. And, you know, for them to go on and then be 5 points up at half time, they won the second half of the second half with 14 men by 7 points. It's actually beyond belief. Like, we should talk about Limerick and their part in it, but just from Dublin's point of view, I've never seen them hurl like that. Yeah. I've never seen them come out and play at that kind of level of intensity and just be so up for the fight and up for the game and just take it and be just hungrier, quicker, sharper than a higher ranked opposition.
Because I'm sure the red card motivated them and they were unhappy with Ciarán Hegarty's response to the contact that he did receive, like Crummy himself. There was a Dublin selector, I don't think it was O'Callaghan himself, but somebody in a Dublin bib on the side of the pitch at the time looked furious as well. But that can only take you so far against one of the greatest teams of all time, being fired up for it, being motivated. It is absolutely mad. Like, it is a result that did stop the country dead. No matter where you were, if you were out and about, everybody was just trying to get their eyes on this. Like, even in Killarney, just a pub just going mental at the end for the fact that Limerick had been knocked out, seeing one of these great teams getting pipped by a perceived much weaker team. And then in Croke Park, like the roar when Keane O'Sullivan scores that goal, like it's kind of like a Dublin football moment level of roar, even though there's clearly far fewer people in the stadium compared to a full Croke Park. And yet you had that kind of guttural hill noise that you only really associate with the footballers coming after those back-to-back goals. And geez, like, I know Cork versus Dublin is heading to a sellout, and maybe a lot of that is down to Cork, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's just been accelerated massively by, you know, a new blue wave of Dublin hurling fans.
I hope so as well, because like, I was at the semi-final in 2013, and I don't know the exact attendance that day, but it was like 60-65, but it felt full, and it felt like the hill was full, and it felt like there was a Dublin, you know, there was a lot of Cork fans there, but it felt like a Dublin hurling game had taken over Croke Park for the first time in my lifetime, in the sense of what Dublin feels, what Croke Park feels like in a Dublin match. And obviously that game was so, so close and so tragic in its own way for Dublin, and it never kicked on from there. So I just think it would be so good for the game in so many ways if that was to happen again, and then for it to kick on to be it an All-Ireland final or to 2026.
Yeah, but there's always been huge potential, hasn't there, in Dublin hurling? When you look at the club scene here, and the clubs that have done well, Coolin, Fianna, obviously Niall O'Callaghan's come in now from the club scene, that they've always threatened maybe to break in and become, I think the challenge for them is probably to become a consistently top five or six team, that they probably is very achievable, I would say, for them, if they can just maintain that level of performance or something close to it that they produced the last day.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Paddy's been in touch to say Limerick were cocky, agreed to play in Croker to prepare for Kilkenny. Their young lads didn't even turn up on the hill. They didn't think they had to work hard to win, made lazy mistakes, didn't tackle, and paid the price. Definitely going to put that to the lads after.
Yeah, there's an element of that, I think. And there's also an interesting question around what you do with the extra man when you're a man up, where you position him. I think, did Limerick kind of leave him back
extra
in the
back? Man, the full back line. Yeah.
Kind of, does that invite a team onto you then and give Dublin a chance maybe to gain a foothold? They still can get their shots away from out the field.
Especially when John Heatherton comes on at half-time and just takes up two against one.
Well, Patrick's made that point in the text as well. Great win for the Dubs, old-fashioned hurling with high ball into the square and putting their bodies on the line. John Heatherton, what? When I saw him on the bench, I was kind of scratching my head.
Yeah, surprised.
Go with your best foot forward, but you'd be tempted to keep him in reserve for the Cork game if it's any bit close. John Heatherton burst for 20 minutes, especially a full forward is going to ask serious questions.
But it was really good performances all around the pitch from Dublin as well. Like, the challenge will be to kind of reach that pitch again in 2 weeks' time. Like, that's not going to be easy. I do feel like they left everything on. Like, there's so much to it. Like, it was unbelievable. From Limerick's point of view, I think that text is one of those, like, I can understand it, but it's a little harsh. What I think happened is they did probably, to some extent, slightly overlook Dublin. I don't think they didn't prepare for the game. I don't think they didn't look at opposition analysis or anything like that. But I just think that they probably thought they would do enough, and especially when it went to 14. And it's an oldish team, Limerick. And I think that's an important point. Like, I was looking through it today, the 2018 All-Ireland final. Of the 20 players that played that day versus the 20 players that played on Saturday, 13 of the Limerick players played in both games. That's a lot.
It's a huge amount.
And it's like four new guys started, and two of them are, you know, Barry Nash and David Reedy, who are, I think, 29 and 30. And then three guys come off the bench of the seven new players, right? So it hasn't been that much turnover. Now, that can happen in a team that, you know, is one of the greatest teams that has so much success, is that these guys are not going to be replaced by better players. So they're going to be there for slightly longer. It's fine. And it's not even an age thing or a fitness thing. I think it's just miles in the clock. And eventually you get caught with that little bit overlooking a team. They come out with a performance that we did not see coming. No, nobody saw coming. It wasn't there in Dublin, from what we could have seen. But, and then how do you raise yourself mid-game?
But to that point then, that it wasn't obvious that Dublin were going to produce this performance. I don't think it was obvious that Limerick were going to produce a performance like this based on what we saw from them in the Munster Championship. I thought they were excellent in some of their games in the Munster Championship.
Yeah,
Cork, how long ago was that?
They've played six games in the Championship, though, and they only won two. They hammered Cork in this signature performance that you mentioned, and you're dead right. And then they played Waterford in a procession that was an awful game. And they drew with Tipperary. They lost to Clare. It was a dead rubber, fair enough. And they lost the Munster final on penalties in a game that they arguably should have won. If the ref was using the clock properly, they would have won.
They'd won four competitive games out of 11 in 2025 coming into the game.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Four out of 12.
Four out of 12
now.
Not
great, really, is it?
No, and I guess we wrote off the league form because it's Limerick and they've been underwhelming in the league in the past. And then that performance against Cork kind of felt like it answered all those questions that might have been around them at that point.
And what do you do now? Because there's still loads of hurling in it. They're still within, honestly, the referee playing a phantom minute from winning Munster for seven in a row. And that, like, so do you break it up? You know, I do think there needs to be a little bit more evolution in the team. There's got, like, again, who do you drop? It's not even an individual thing. It's just, you need the likes of English. The likes of Cottle O'Neill is not starting. He's gone backwards this year in terms of his playing time. You need the likes of Shane O'Brien, I'm surprised, isn't getting a game. You need these guys to take over as the leaders of the team now, not the guys who are coming off the bench for 10 minutes.
That's pretty much the theme on the text line as well. John in Limerick says, lads, Limerick haven't the same quality players coming through. Sooner or later, the multiple All-Ireland winning Galacticos would run out of road and transition is missing. A different John says, the Dubs were outstanding. Too many Limerick players just didn't perform. The Limerick line were very poor. Limerick clearly had Kilkenny on their minds. And then you can get us on YouTube as well, by the way. Our WhatsApp number is 0879-180-180. But on YouTube, Nick Kerr says Cork Dublin already heading for a sellout. Just Nally left on general sale. So that's pretty much guaranteed to sell out at this juncture. Gut feeling it's going to be an Armagh Tyrone final, says one texter. Another one says, I bet all pundits will go with Armagh. Somebody says Aikino was better. That's Jungle Line in touch to say Aikino was better. We haven't seen Saipan yet. We can't just say Aikino's better.
Although, in fairness, I feel like Aikino has been forgotten by history. What a piece of art that was.
And then finally, Paddy D says, all lads, surely we mentioned Alex Dunn getting an F1 outing for McLaren.
Don't worry, it's in the newsroom. Don't worry.
Do you want to skip on to it there?
Sure. Alex Dunn, the Offaly man, will take a massive step in his motorsport career. This weekend, the 19-year-old will take part in Friday's practice session in the McLaren Formula One car at the Austrian Grand Prix. The McLaren development driver has won two F2 feature races this season and currently leads the driver's standings there by 3 points. And he's set to sit in for McLaren driver Lando Norris for Friday's hour-long FP1 session, which starts at around 12:30 Irish time.
And is he joke hanning us?
He did. Well, let's just pull back the curtain here a little bit. We had Alex Dunn on Friday afternoon. We're like, you know, Friday, busy day, interview with an F1 driver, or F2 driver, Freudian slip, F2 driver, and you think to yourself, there's no motorsport this weekend, no F2 race. We could hold this till next week. You know, take that risk. Nothing's going to happen. Like, he can't possibly have a win. He can't have a crash. Nothing can happen this weekend. And this is why we didn't hold it when we put it out last Friday, because we knew that this news was in the ether. He was going to make some sort of massive jump up. He's doing remarkably well. This is just another remarkable step up for him. He's been in the car before. He's got a test drive in the McLaren car earlier this year and then got a second one last week around the same time as Brad Pitt in the McLaren F1 car. This is just crazy stuff, really, for the Offaly man.
So if Piastri or Norris go down, do you think they're going to go for Alex or for Brad as the stand-in?
Sorry,
it's
Brad.
It's an injury.
Yeah. If one of them is going to be turfed out, it might be Lando Norris at this point. I know it's only, you have to bring a rookie in for a couple of test drives every year. So that's,
he's 19. You know, there's plenty of time on his side, it's his first year in Formula 2. But the fact that he's seen this way by McLaren is so promising.
Yeah. Where do you want to go next, Al?
Let's go to the golf from last night. Tommy Fleetwood narrowly missed out on claiming his first ever PGA Tour title after losing out by a shot to Keegan Bradley at the Travelers Championship in Connecticut. The Englishman had a two-shot lead with three to play and led by one on the 18th tee, but he three-putted from just off the front of the green as Bradley made birdie to win by a shot on 15 under par. It means Fleetwood has now recorded 41 top 10 finishes in 159 starts in the PGA Tour, but he still has to win, and he says he'll take the positives from the week despite his disappointment.
You know, I'm upset now, I'm gutted, I'm angry. When it calms down, look at the things that I did well, look at the things that I can learn from. I said yesterday, I haven't been in this position all year, so it's been a while. felt like I did a lot of good things, but there was things that I, you know, definitely can do better and I have to do better.
Yeah, let's turn our attention back to the League of Ireland because Scarlett Heron is at Bowes versus Rovers for us tonight, and before the game, she caught up with the fans of both sides who gave their thoughts on Damien Duff's departure from Shelburne. Have a listen.
So, what do we think of Damien Duff leaving his role as Shelburne boss yesterday?
A bit delighted, to say the least. Sick of his throwing his toys out with the pram job. It was pretty funny at the start now, in fairness, but it's just got ridiculous at the end of it.
I don't think it's a surprise, the way he's been going on in his media interviews after games lately. I think the cracks have been appearing for a long time, so I'm not surprised by it.
It's probably not good for the league, really. Like, he's a big name, so he would get a lot of people there. But I don't know. It seems weird the way he left, and I don't know why he would leave after winning the league with them. Whether it's with the players or someone else, I don't know. But
brilliant player, brilliant personality, good guy. Won the league last year. The league will survive without him.
He brought a lot of attention to the league, and you can't deny that, yeah.
100%. Okay. Do you think the league will suffer now without him?
No, I don't think so. I think it'll keep going. He brought a lot of attention to it, but there's new fans coming to it all the time, and I think the league will keep going either way.
I think he thinks that you can put himself on the papers, get the bad press away from Shells, put it on to somebody else.
No Duff, no problem, it turns out. Let's go to the Waterford RSC, Nathan Murphy.
Yes, 2 minutes gone, and Shelburne lead Waterford by a goal to nil. And would you believe it, it's Harry Wood who scored the greatest goal of Damien Duff's reign, that title-winning goal up in Derry last November, who has scored for Shelburne. Joey O'Brien Shelburne, as we now have to refer to it. First attack of the game, down the left-hand side. Tyreek Wilson whipped in a really dangerous ball. Bounced across the six-yard box. Mipo Adebeko stuck out his right boot. Didn't quite get there. Don't think he got a touch, but Harry Wood snuck in at the back post and knocked it into the empty net to give Shells the dream start. There's a good travelling support here. I've just been over chatting to quite a few of the Shells supporters who were all quite calm and felt that maybe if Duff had taken them as far as he felt he could, that now was the time to do it. All a little bit unsure, though, what it means, and certainly frustrated by the timing of it. But they'll be pretty happy with how their side have started this game. And they've made the dream scenario under Joey O'Brien with that very early goal from Harry Wood. It means they lead by a goal to nil.
Thank you very much, Nathan. We've also got a goal at Daly Mount, Colin.
Yeah, Dale Rooney has put Bohemians 1-0 up there against Shamrock Rovers. That goal came after just 2 minutes, so it's Bowes 1, Shamrock Rovers 0. And don't forget, Bowes looking to beat Shamrock Rovers for the third time this season, if they can pull it off tonight, which would be quite a run, given we're only at the end of June.
Yeah, for sure. It's scoreless in the other three games this evening. It's Cork City up against Drogheda United, Sligo against Galway, and St. Pat's at home to Derry City. We'll keep you up to speed on all of those scores throughout the evening. We've time for maybe one or two more stories, Carl. I know there's news on Crystal Palace. There's some transfer news.
Yep, we've got a couple of other bits to get through. Good news for Crystal Palace today. Their hopes of playing in Europe next season appear to have been boosted with John Textor selling his 43% stake in the club. New York Jets owner Woody Johnson will buy his shares, with the deal eliminating the risk of Palace breaching UEFA's multi-club ownership rules. Textor holds shares in French club Lyon, who will also play in the Europa League next season. Once the deal is approved by the Premier League, Palace's place in the competition should be confirmed.
And very briefly, have to just jump in on that. I would, as an NFL fan, say that good news for Palace wouldn't be how I would describe Woody Johnson taking over a significant share of their club. Awful owner. As of the Jets. I don't know what he'll do with Palace, but he's a terrible owner of the Jets.
Terrible, in a sporting sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, sorry, yeah, in a sporting sense. Obviously, how he is as an owner of businesses is up for debate. I don't know about that. But how he has done for the New York Jets is not good.
You're saying he could be a terrible human being, but what I know is that he's much worse than that. He's terrible in a sporting sense. Right, we might have to leave the news round there, Carl. Thank you very much. Thanks. But that's this evening. Mick, thank you.
Off the ball, GAA.
There's only a couple of guarantees in life, like debt, taxes, and Mayo will be as unpredictable as hell. And I knew they would come out with a performance, and it did.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Win a dream home in Spain, plus €50,000 cash with Westmeath GAA, while supporting future generations of players. The draw closes on the 30th of June. Don't miss this life-changing chance, so get your ticket now on winahomeinspain.com.